also had in mind the circumstances which gave rise to the work, and how the writer believes it relates to other treatises on the same subject, written by his predecessors or his contemporaries. For whatever it might be suitable to state about philosophy in a preface, say, an historical sketch of the main drift and point of view, the general content and results, a string of desultory assertions and assurances about the truth, this cannot be accepted as the form and manner in which to expound philosophical truths.
The Scottish philosopher David Hume and Hegel's fellow German idealist Immanuel Kant had raised serious questions about the nature of knowledge itself. Of course, Hegel was aware of this, and their concern became the dominant problem of philosophy. How and what can we know? Can we resolve metaphysical questions concerning man, nature, and God? Is our faculty of knowing adequate for the task? Hegel's suspicious of the widespread belief that we must first discover whether knowledge is possible before we set out to know. He calls this effort knowing before you know. He likens it to the fellow who wants to learn to swim before going into the water. Hegel makes this point in the following passage.
Meanwhile, if the fear of falling into error introduces an element of distrust into science, which without any scruples of that sort goes to work and actually does know, it is not easy to understand why conversely a distrust should not be placed in this very distrust, and why we should not take care, lest the fear of error is not just the initial error.
Hegel believes that philosophy can begin only if we actually start to think reflectively about something. We must plunge right into thinking when we discuss whether philosophical knowledge is possible. He sees it as quite paradoxical, if not downright comical, that someone should claim to know that there can be no philosophical knowledge. Hegel tells us that the point of departure for philosophy is experience. We begin with our feelings, perceptions, fantasies, ideas, aims, and duties. Indeed, we begin with whatever we find in the awareness of ourselves, of others, and of the natural world. No experience is excluded from the circle of philosophy as it aims to interpret the significance of our living experience. Hegel gets even more specific in describing the starting point of philosophical inquiry.
The philosopher has to reckon with popular modes of thought and the objects of religion.
Popular modes of thought include a mixture of common sense, folklore, imaginative representations, and familiar maxims. This body of meaningful experience is Hegel's starting point for what he sometimes calls the thinking study of things. Hegel believes that philosophy is also concerned with the doctrines of religion. He thinks that philosophy and religion have the same content. We can see a similar idea in the Western tradition of equating God and truth. Hegel's so-called rationalism, his total commitment to the power of reason in the world, is best expressed in two ideas. First, he believes that the appropriate form of philosophy is not in images and pictorial representations, but in concepts. Second, philosophical truth must be expressed in a comprehensive and coherent system that Hegel does not hesitate to call scientific. But in his time, the term scientific had not yet taken on the meaning of the natural sciences as we use the word today. It generally meant the conceptual analysis of anything, or to have systematic knowledge of any subject matter. So it's not odd for Hegel to describe philosophy as scientific.
The systematic development of truth in scientific form can alone be the true shape in which truth exists. To help to bring philosophy nearer to the form of science, that goal where it can lay aside the name of love of knowledge and be actual knowledge, that is what I have set before me. The inner necessity that knowledge should be science lies in its very nature, and the adequate and sufficient explanation for this lies simply and solely in the systematic exposition of philosophy itself.
But Hegel's aware that his view runs counter to the prevailing tendency of thought.
When we state the true form of truth to be its scientific character, or what is the same thing, when it is maintained that truth finds the medium of its existence in notions or conceptions alone, I know that this seems to contradict an idea with all its consequences, which makes great pretensions and has gained widespread acceptance and conviction at the present time.
Hegel has in mind here the philosophy of Schelling, which emphasizes intuition and imagination. He's also thinking of the pietists who insisted that feelings are primary, especially in matters of religion. For Hegel, these outlooks amount to emphasizing personal preferences and private revelations. But Hegel believes that philosophy, the effort to grasp the truth, is a strenuous affair demanding the labor of thought. Truth is not to be gained by flights of fancy, appeals to direct insight, or to emotional satisfaction. He attacks Schelling, visionaries, mystics, and others who reject thought and are content with private revelations.
Still less must this kind of contentment, which holds science in contempt, take upon itself to claim that raving obscurantism of this sort is something higher than science. These apocalyptic utterances pretend to occupy the very center and the deepest depths. They look askance at all definiteness and preciseness of meaning. And they deliberately hold back from conceptual thinking and the constraining necessities of thought as being the sort of reflection which they say can only feel at home in the sphere of finitude.
Hegel says the force of mind is only as great as its expression.
But just as there is a breadth which is emptiness, there is a depth which is emptiness.